That's hooey and applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, blah, and blah. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Oh, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shake in NFL. In NFL and Dave. Damn a shake.
Hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Damashek here. What's going down? Welcome to episode number two of the Dave Damashek football program. And number two, I guess Cam Newton, that's the best number two in the history of football. That's pretty bad. So I guess the show is dedicated to him or Jimmy Clausen. Or I guess we could just go David Akers. I guess Jeter. Derek Jeter in sports history is the best number two, or maybe Moses Malone. Let's ask our pal, the man who just is has just been hired. Congratulations on being Maria Shriver's new housekeeper, Adam Rank. What's going down, Rank?
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, read Rank's work on NFL.com. There's something I want to get into with you in just a second here. How are we, Rank?
Great. And I know you'd believe that the NFL didn't start before, you know, it started in 1958, but there was a guy named Charlie Trippi who wore number two for the Chicago Cardinals.
Don't care.
He was a part of their 1947 championship team.
I certainly don't care about anything that happened before 1950 in the NFL. It's irrelevant. No disrespect to the Trippi estate, but I really don't care. Hey, so let's say hello also to our pal, the insider, the mole, Kamish Goodell's mole, Necktie Milner, the producer. What's going down, Necktie?
God, I went from producer Dylan to now I'm Necktie and I'm the mole. God.
Yeah, you're a suit. You're
Thank
a corporate
you.
Suit. How are we, Milner?
Well, I've been better after that introduction, but otherwise I'm fine, Dave.
Hey, listen, I want to fire since I just mentioned Commissioner Goodell. I hate to start off on a sour note, but I just want to fire a shot across the bow of the NFL. I have said several times already, a few episodes into the show now, I've said that we will not be talking about the lockout, and I intend to abide by that because I don't understand the vagaries of big business. I don't understand macroeconomics. But listen, there's a lot going on in the world of sports. I don't know if you've noticed it, Kamish Goodell and everybody else. If there's not any football going on, if we're not getting ready for a football season, hey, this spring happens to be chock full of very entertaining postseasons in the NHL and the NBA. I personally have been enjoying NHL puck, Stanley Cup playoffs. Hard to argue with the greatness of that 2 month stretch every spring. But how about the NBA playoffs? I feel, although my heart does go out to Seattle sports fans. Can you imagine watching?
Yeah, actually, I can. I actually can't imagine
That's
exactly
right.
what they're
LA
going
Rams
through.
Fan. That's right. I forgot. Yes, you can relate to that. Not really. I mean, but it didn't happen that quickly. The Rams didn't leave. First of all, they didn't leave L.A. They left Anaheim. They left Orange County.
Which completely is where different... I'm from, so it's even worse.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, but so you actually benefited from Los Angeles County's loss
absolutely.
When you got the
oh, absolutely.
The Anaheim Rams. But when they then became the St. Louis Rams, it was another, what, 10 years? Not 10 years, but 8 years.
About five.
Oh, is that quick? All right, not that big. So not that
but
big
the
a difference.
Sonics left. They were shady, man. The new owners.
Well, they already had Kevin Durant.
Wait, that was shady, and
yes.
what Georgia did.
Yes.
Georgia pulling the major league was not shady.
Shadier.
At all.
Shadier.
Did so, they trade? Did Seattle trade? Oh, I guess they did. They traded Ray Allen, kind of like the Rams traded Dickerson.
Well,
the parallels.
And there's Kevin. You know, they had Kevin Durant in the fold. You knew that he was probably going to be good, but
he's
you
our
immediately.
Kurt Warner. He'd be our Kurt Warner.
I don't know if that's a perfect comparison, but all right. Kevin Durant, and now imagine watching Russell Westbrook and this team, that if they don't get past the Mavs this year, they're likely, I imagine the NBA has their fingers crossed against OKC making their run this year, because they're going to be a dynasty one way or the other in all likelihood, and as long as the NBA can stave off having the best team in the league playing in the state of Oklahoma, the better for ratings. But imagine being in Seattle and watching this dynamite team and just knowing that team is stocked and ready to go for the next several
that.
Years.
I'm going to wonder what that's
at least they have the Seahawks to fall back on, right?
Well, I've said it before, I'll say it again. That city may be the most difficult to be a sports fan in. That's something to work on. We'll have to figure that one out. Cleveland, obviously, pretty bad.
Yeah.
I mean, good news for them winning the lottery, but that's not going to make them great anytime
Philly.
Soon.
It's just a heartbreaking. They're heartbreaking.
The Phillies just won recently. Like,
yeah. I'm not talking baseball.
No, that's
here.
A fair point.
We're not talking baseball.
If it weren't for the Phillies.
Outside of the sports they win in, they're not good.
But no, I hear what Necktie's talking about over there. Because if it weren't for the Phillies winning that one, there is that debate of, would you rather just be the Cubs and be out right. of it by the end of by the time you get to Memorial Day, or would you rather be prior to 2004 a Red Sox fan and go through the heartbreak, get into October, and then lose in the most heartbreaking?
How hard
fashion
was it to be
time?
The Eagles fan when Donovan McNabb kept going to the NFC Championship game?
Flyers are always good, but can never get over the hump. The Sixers have had a lot of great teams, right?
The Red Sox got too much credit for the heartbreak because in '86, what they did to the Angels was as horrific as what Bill Buckner did, but the Red Sox get all the press. The Angels had just as bad of a history, and especially for a guy who's late 30s.
The Halos did bad a
history.
Wait,
no, because if you're one of these guys who's like, this didn't exist before 1958, then you got to say that, like, in the lifetime, my lifetime, like, I've got to say I'm pretty close in age to your buddy, the sports guy. So for us to go through, we went through the same things, Red Sox, Angels, except for the Angels, it was worse because we could never get to the World Series.
All right. Just because they took Mike Witt out and put Donnie Moore in one time does not equal the suffering that Red Sox fans have gone through for decades.
And it's always on TV. We had MLB Network.
Listen, the next one, I'm telling you, that's another shot across the bow. The next one, the buttocks. Listen.
Can I give us credit for talking four major sports in the first 10 minutes of the show? That's pretty good.
May I proceed, Necktie? Here's what I wanted to say. On the other side of things, an entertaining series is afoot with the Bulls and the Heats. And LeBron makes me think as I watch that. I picked the Heats. I said last summer, as soon as that happened, they will go to the finals. And people say, but they're only three guys. Here's the thing. As we talk about lockout and everything, I only understand it in the broadest of terms, lockout, strike. What it is, it's the man against the working class. I understand that NBA players and NFL players, professional athletes in general, are making heaps and heaps of loot. So obviously it's offensive when Rashard Mendenhall and other guys talk, and Larry Johnson back in the day, when they compare themselves to slaves. Obviously that's pretty laughable stuff when that sort of thing happens. That being said, I understand the spirit of what they're talking about. And LeBron, I think the real shame for him is, and for the Miami Heats, is that they could have handled this when the decision went down. He's so vilified, and understandably, because of the way he handled it, he deserves, and so does the team, deserve to be despised. But if they would have spun it a little bit differently, if they would have had the right people in their ear instead of Maverick Carter, they could have really been heroes to the working man. Because they would have said, listen, we're bucking the man. We're not going to let the man make decisions for us. We're not going to let the man decide where we play our ball. We've jumped right over him. We've gotten together. We, the working class, have unionized and formed this mighty trio. We don't need GMs and executives and billionaires making our decisions. We're going to do it. We're just merely millionaires making our decisions. Bosh, Wade, LeBron, strike a blow for the bourgeoisie. Down with the proletariat. Don't you see the America, especially during these economic times, in the haves and have-nots? You could have rallied the nation around this. Look what they've done, people. Look what they've done, working-class America. The man, they've transcended the man. They've gotten together, and they've told the man how it's going to be, not the other way around. Do you see what I'm saying?
Dylan, I'll take this one. What?
What the hell are you talking about? What do you mean, what?
That's the worst.
That absolutely could be the case. Now, if they wouldn't have gotten to Miami, that also would have.
These three guys are rallying around, getting the people behind them. Yeah, that's
been
what
that
happens.
It's the hammer and sickle. The thing you're forgetting is LeBron was walking away from his hometown. Now, they could have done this.
The true working class city.
For Cleveland, that was like their entire team moving. Because he was their entire team.
I agree that there is. I think that this sounds like hyperbole. That the most tragic departure for a fan base in the history of sport.
Of anything,
literally, I think the heart. I mean, aside from an entire team leaving, Yes.
I'll give the Cavs fan. That was worse than the Rams.
Your hometown.
Georgia didn't call a press conference and an interview with Jim Gray.
Yeah, when your hometown hero, or at least from the basic region, when he departs the state, that lousy state to the left of the Keystone State, when he ditches that state and leaves it behind, yes, that's horrific. But there was even a way to handle that a little bit more gently. It was as though he was thumbing his nose, you know, taking my talents to South Beach, that whole thing. Obviously, he was basically saying, I'm leaving behind, gray skies and I'm going to South Beach. That was obnoxious again. And also, Miami as a destination maybe undermines my whole striking a blow for the bourgeoisie kind of thing. If they would have gone to, I don't know, anywhere else. But Miami is I can understand, and that along with Hollywood are loathsome places to Middle America, probably, or
to the Rust Belt. Do you think losing jobs? Do you think that?
I think you're missing my larger point,
and we apparently are.
And point number two is I really just wanted an excuse to say bourgeoisie. I love to say it. So by the way, wanted to make mention of the fact that the show is now available on iTunes, and make sure you look that up, Dave Damashek Football Program. Subscribe, won't you? And also hit me up on the Twitter, at Damashek, and you can also hit up my main man Rank here. What is it? At Adam Rank,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So mine's a little more entertaining, but listen, you know what? Go all in. May as well, while you're on the Twitter, sign up for Rank. Something that, Rank, you were talking about, I think inspired for the same reason that I was, the passing of Harmon Killebrew. Mm-hmm. And I contend that maybe it might be, Harmon Killebrew might be the baddest sports name in the history of sport. Harmon Killebrew.
The toughest. Right. Not the baddest.
Toughest.
Yeah, that's...
I mean,
that was
were you splitting
clear.
Hairs, Nick Todd?
Thank
necktie.
You.
Anyway.
Sorry.
So
here comes another memo from 280 Park.
What is that? That's home office? That's
yeah,
NFL
that's,
home office?
For those not initiated, yes. 280 Park is our league office in New York.
I haven't received any notes.
You're off the grid.
That's allowed.
Yeah,
you're off the grid.
I'm the expendable
as I like
one.
It.
I'm the one they can talk to.
What have they been saying to you?
Well,
who's contacted you? The commissioner?
I think somebody associated with the commissioner.
And who's that?
Have you
actually gotten any memos?
I may have. Yes, actually a couple.
This week's in big bold letters say, "Watch the top 100 show." Right?
Yeah, there was that. Yeah, I wonder who's tipping them off.
It's not me. Thing. Don't look over here.
You know, I think there was a reference to, don't talk about Peyton Manning anymore. That's our guy.
Wait a second. So people from the home office, the headquarters of the NFL,
yes,
are contacting you to critique negatively, it sounds like, your performance or our performance.
A little bit. I don't think they appreciate us explaining the truth about Peyton Manning.
Well, I don't appreciate this top 100 list that they've thrown at us so far. Mm. And as a matter of fact, me and Rank, we're going to be kibitzing about that. Milner, it's going to be our first official bonus podcast,
yeah.
Right?
Sunday night after the top 100 show, kind of a companion podcast, as you if you will, to the top 100 reaction show.
Ooh.
Sunday
wait.
Night, look for it.
Ooh, la and la. I look forward to
it. We're going to work Sunday night now?
So be it. I don't care if it's a righteous cause, denouncing this top 100 list. Cockamamie so far, is in my opinion. And you know where this thing's headed. Peyton Manning's going to be number one.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of disrespect.
I think that's why they're upset.
With you?
Yes.
But
not with you, obviously.
Well, maybe like Necktie says, I'm off the grid.
Have you heard from the Manning family yet?
Not yet.
Well, before we get into that, though, real quick, like we were talking about, Harmon Killebrew. Awesome name. It's got harm, it's got murder, and it's got beer in it. I mean, that's about as tough a trio as you can possibly get. But then, Rank, I saw that you had on NFL.com your pick six, well-received. You put out your toughest names. Is that how you call it? Toughest names?
Toughest names.
Toughest names in NFL history.
We didn't use nicknames or anything, but like, you know, your God-given name.
Who was your number one?
Steve Stonebreaker.
Pretty good. Pretty good. I thought you left off some
pretty good.
Some pretty, that's a great one.
Can you break stones?
Well,
Stonebreaker.
Let me get into it. Let me tell you.
What do you think Stonebreaker's going to do if he's not playing football?
I love the name. I think it's great. Although Steve ain't exactly roughneck.
Steve is better because he had a son who played. He had
Michael Stein. Yeah, I remember it from Notre Dame.
I thought Steve sounded better.
I think Mike's a little tough. I think Mike's
Mike?
A little, yeah, I like that one. Well, I was thinking the ones that are, one that you listed that I think is terribly overrated, not terribly overrated, but Max Strong, the fullback. Max Strong, to me, it tries a little too hard. It just, it's a little on the nose for me. It's something that you would call, you know, if you, I think I had a G.I. Joe figurine when I was growing up named Max Strong, or it's like a good porno name, you know, it tries to, it's like, it's like the Girl Scout cookie.
I'm going to get a memo for that.
It's too cloying. It's like the Samoa cookie of the Girl Scout cookies. Everybody, oh, Samoa is the best cookie. Yeah. Cause it's got everything in it. How bad? I mean, it's got, you're just stuffing everything in it. Max Strong.
So you don't like a Samoa cookie?
It tastes fine, but it's hard. But it, like I say, it's making too much effort. It's,
so you're saying that the Strong family.
The correct answer to that question, by the way, is the Thin Mint. I've gone over this extensively in the past. The Thin Mint is definitely the best of the Girl Scout cookies. But let's not get sidetracked. Yeah, that's overrated,
Max
I think,
Strong.
A little bit. Underrated, you never hear, and you didn't list it, Rank, is Sam Huff. That's a pretty good one. Sam Huff.
Huff's good.
70. Wearing that number 70 across his chest. That's pretty good.
Like, but does it also sound like a guy who's wheezing? Like, I imagine that Peter King huffs a lot as he's walking to the press box or something.
Oh.
I don't understand that shot.
That was pretty below the belt for no reason.
Do you know me?
I do. I should come to expect this, but every day I get surprised.
I also like Mel Blunt. Mel. Pretty good. I like that one.
That's a great one.
Blunt. You didn't mention Chuck Bednarik.
Wait, hold on. Bednarik, and I thought about this. It's tough because we know the guy. Because Bednarik made it tough.
I think that is part of it.
On its own, when he was, you know, as a baby in his crib, it wasn't like Bednarik was a tough name. He made it tough.
I disagree. Bednarik.
Well, you say that's the way like I said. Anything's tough.
What about Charles Bednarik?
Dylan Milner. I tried to say it tough like that. Say it doesn't work.
Aww.
You know, if you break the words down, it's the same thing as harm and killabrew. Like I say, harm, kill, brew, awesome, makes a statement about one of the great sluggers in baseball history. It's fitting. Same way, Damashek has Dame and She in it. Also fitting, perhaps. But, right.
Kill a brew. It's also a good euphemism for an appropriate action on a Saturday. I'm going to go kill this brew.
Yes, like exactly. It. Yeah. What about Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen? I mean, at least as a duo, that has to, those two in tandem.
But Deacon's a nickname.
It is?
Yeah, it's David Jones.
Oh, I didn't know that. I never knew that was a nickname. All right, so I guess we'll strike it, but it is pretty good.
Great.
What about Merlin?
Merlin's great.
Sounds like a magician.
We've gotten, because we grew up around Merlin Olsen, and he was father, whatever he was.
Father Murphy,
and he seemed like a pleasant fella and everything. But Merlin, I want you, when one of you two makes a masculine child, I want you to name him Merlin, because that's pretty good. He's magic. That's wonderful.
Merlin Milner?
Yeah, that doesn't work.
That doesn't really.
All right, it's on you,
roll
Rank.
Off. Merlin Rank.
Talk about a great name that doesn't suit the way that to watch the guy play, but one that you left off there, and a lot of people I noticed in your comments section mentioned
really?
This
did
one.
They, did they bring this up at all?
Webster Slaughter. How can you beat that? I mean, you know, there was Enos Slaughter of the St. Louis Cardinals.
I did think of Webster Slaughter. I didn't think to put him in also consider, but he was a receiver, and I think
I know. Well, he wasn't a rugged guy, but yes, Webster.
So you're saying the position has to do with the name?
Listen,
no, is that
you're
what you're
all
telling
over
me?
The place, Rank.
What's wrong with Slaughter? If he was a lineman, he'd
what
be on the list.
What, have you gotten a guest for us? Don't question me.
All right, now it's time. I'm gonna unveil for you what I think are the top three. All right, and so Milner, if you please, I'm gonna need a little bit of a drum roll here. At number three, Fred Smirlis. Fred Smirlis. That's just tough. And maybe I'm associating him with being, you know, on the nose there, you know, being right up at the, you know, on top of the center there. But Fred Smirlis, that's pretty tough. That's down and dirty. At number two, the second greatest name, the second toughest name in NFL history, DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Congratulations to Brickashaw. And Ferguson by itself. Joe Ferguson, even, the great Bills QB, is pretty tough on its own. But the Brickashaw Ferguson, you can't be any better. That's Necktie Milner's middle name, by the way. A little piece of trivia for you there. Are we ready for the number one?
Why are you laughing at that?
How do you like? Why? How could? By the way, Rank, how could you fail to put the Brickashaw Ferguson on your list?
It's trying too hard.
It's
the Ferguson family was trying too hard right off the gate.
I've just gone over that.
There's nothing wrong with that name.
How does the Brickashaw Ferguson try too hard?
No, you just you put brick in there. I'm not buying it.
All right.
You can't curry favor with me by doing this.
All right, I'm going to go then. I'm going to jump then right to the number one, the toughest NFL name in history, Otis Sistrunk. That's it. That's right. Wonderful. Yes, of course, cheer. Of course. Well-deserved Otis Sistrunk. And a bad-looking man, too, you know, especially in that silver and black of the Raiders. Apparently not the greatest player. I vaguely remember watching him growing up, but part of the silver and black, and you know that bald head and bad looking eyes and everything. Otis Sistrunk. I don't think you can do any better than that. How say you, Fish Tank? I thought you guys would agree. Thank you.
Total package. And when you remember his football card, he had that. He just a great look about him too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Total package, you know, but yeah, we're going straight names.
All right. Well, listen, like I say, the top 100, this cockamamie thing continues to be unfurled each Sunday night. Me and Rank are going to be talking about it on Sunday night, so be on the lookout for that little bonus podcast there. And real quick, I would like to say about the names before we move on. The one a lot of people emailed me about this was, you got to mention Dick Butkus when you're talking tough names. I feel like that one's more homoerotic than it is anything else. Dick
yes.
Butkus? I don't know.
Yeah, he was a tough guy, but I think he had to compensate from growing up in the schoolyard with that name.
There are certain guys who are afflicted with that. I mean, same thing goes for Gaylord Perry. Yeah. You know, like it either steals you when you're growing up or you know, it makes you turn, you know, like just having damn in my name, you know, the Damashek. People used to say, you have a bad word in your name. And I would, shut up, stop it. And they'd be like, the damn people who live in a shack. And I'd be like, cut it out. And then all these years later, decades later, I'm a mess, you know. I have self-esteem issues. But, you know, other guys overcome it and then they become Hall of Fame players. So that's the difference between me and Dick Butkus and Gaylord Perry. They overcame their bad names. Yeah, they became forged. Yes, right. So, all right, we're going to be talking about the top 100 on Sunday night. Let's not get into the details of that. Instead, let's turn our gaze to something we started last week, which is the most overrated guys in the NFL currently. And a bunch of you, I asked for you, the listener, to drop me a line on Twitter, at Damashek once again, and here are my thoughts on it so far. Who are the most overrated guys? We started out with Peyton Manning. Here's one we forgot, Rank, is LaDainian Tomlinson. To me, I think maybe he is no lower than number two on the most overrated list.
Is this based on the postseason?
Well, it's based on what counts in the NFL, and that's the postseason, yes. That's exactly right. Yes, he's been prolific. He has all those touchdowns, all those rushing yards. And by the way, his rushing style has never captured my fancy as much as many of the running legends have. I've seen only highlights, really. I barely saw the juice run the ball, but obviously his gallop is unmistakable. Even Larry Zonka, you know, the another great name, by the way, Zonka. I forgot. Mm-hmm. Zonka.
It's Larry's a Batman thing.
What?
Zonka. Boom.
Batman.
It's still a good name.
I don't know.
So, yeah,
when he runs the ball, there's a giant neon flash across the screen. Says, Zonka! Zonka!
His rugged style. Earl Campbell obviously had a distinct style. And the list goes on and on. Sweetness. There's something about LT that is pedestrian. Just watching him run with the ball. Even that foolish spike he does in the end zone, I don't really care for. But that's really not the point. The point is that he's flamed out in postseasons more than once. And in fact, most recently, the last time he was out on the gridiron was in Heinz Field. And you could make a case that had Brian Schottenheimer not had LaDainian Tomlinson on the field and instead had Sean Green, who was making hay in the second half against the Steel Curtain defense, that the Jets might have scored a touchdown that would have made the game very close. All the momentum would have been going for the Jetropolitans, and they may well have won that title game and gotten to the Super Bowl.
Wasn't Sean Green, weren't they running him, and then they brought
LT in for that goal line, on that drive. He was gashing that defense, as a matter of fact. And on the goal line there, you know, they of course went for it, infamously handed the ball. And LT, it's his style is that he's a little too tentative. He's a little too precise in picking his hole, and that's no way to run the ball against.
Because when he was in San Diego, he would be leaping over the pile. But at this point of his career, I don't think he can do it.
Yeah. So either way, I say LaDainian is a little overrated. We talked about also that Tony Romo belongs in there. Yeah, listen, Roger Staubach. Yeah, he is I don't know if you saw, he called Tony Romo a Super Bowl quarterback, which is a great thing to call somebody who has never actually been in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He's a Super
How
Bowl.
Does that, yeah.
Yeah.
Has he gotten to an award-winning actor?
Has he gotten to a championship game? Has he even gotten that far?
No.
Well, he finally
not.
Won his first playoff game against Donovan McNabb, so does that really count?
Yeah. Well, that was one we listed as well. Here's one we forgot about. Ocho Cinco. He's, you know, over the last 3 years, he's averaged 800 yards in receiving yards and I think five touchdowns or something like that. And yet we continue, not we, but it seems as though he continues to exist as this, to be considered among the best receivers in football. I don't know who perpetuates this at this point. It seems like, I guess, that's the point, is it is the power of self-promotion. But there is no one in the NFL, maybe even in sports, who is more style over substance right now than Ocho Cinco. Who cares? You know, at least T.O., people sort of compare those two as though you're making an apples-to-apples comparison because they both like to dance in the end zone and they're both self-promoters. But the difference is T.O., who often gets mentioned as overrated, is a guy who, outside of that 1 year in Buffalo on an atrocious team, has, if nothing else, has been productive. He's definitely a pain in the butt, and I wouldn't want him on my team, but he definitely, in terms of numbers, is very productive. I don't know how you could call him overrated, yes?
T.O. or Ocho Cinco?
Are you listening, Rank?
T.O.
Ow! Told you. Listen, mind your P's and Q's, please. No napping.
It smells like burnt hair in here.
But doesn't I still would contend that T.O. is overrated. He drops the ball way too much. He's ruined every quarterback he's ever played
with. He's also 38.
But he's ruined. What has he done?
Well,
he's third on the all-time receiving list.
Congratulations.
I also say, I know.
Exactly.
This is
congratulations.
When you,
so he's Tim Brown now. Who cares?
No, he is not. No, listen. I've said this. We've discussed this before, Rank. I think, I know it's hard to believe, but if you look at it, Jerry Rice is the clear-cut number one best wide receiver of all time. After that, T.O. probably is the second best receiver. I know that's hard to fathom, but go ahead and look at it. Break it down. Who ranks ahead of T.O. among all-time wide receivers?
Who is ruined?
Marvin Harrison? A little bit limited in what he could do.
But who's ruined more franchises?
All right.
He's the Ted McGinley of receivers.
And I am the Ted McGinley of podcasting. But listen, what are you how can you argue with that point?
He's too disruptive. He drops too many balls, and he never takes his team to the promised land.
I'm waiting for you to name somebody and do not mention Don Hutson. No, I don't want to talk about somebody who played in the 40s. I want to talk about.
I'm sorry, he played.
What about in the Super Bowl with Donovan McNabb when T.O. finally got there and they finally made the Super Bowl?
And they beat the Patriots.
He had the broken ankle. He had one of the greatest games he had all year.
Don't start putting him on the class with Jack Youngblood because that'll just offend me.
Let me share some of these. Connor Cottrell dropped the line. He says, top of the my overrated list, Randy Moss. What real good has he ever brought to a team? None, is what he says. Randy Moss, as it happens, is also definitely in the top four or five best wide receivers of all time.
What do you put Randy? But is it Randy? Where would?
You can make a comparison between. I think you can make an argument if you remove Don Hutson, especially from the equation, that the second best receiver of all time comes down to a debate between Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, hard as that is to believe, I don't necessarily agree with that, he's brought no good to it. There was that one magic year for the Patriots, but yeah, another guy who's been a big pain in the tush.
Why wouldn't Michael Irvin be considered the second best?
Make your case.
Well, because he sacrificed so many statistics to be on a good team, to be part of a great team. He was a great blocker. He was a great teammate. He did. And when he needed to come up big, he always came up big. In the Super Bowl 27, he had the two touchdown passes. This guy, you forget, because the way the Cowboys ran their offense is everything went through Emmitt Smith. So when they get down to the goal line where some teams might pass, they're running the ball to Emmitt Smith. And also he had to contend with Jay Novacek, who is a great tight end. And the Cowboys, and I feel that...
When we do get into all-time overrated, by the way, Emmitt Smith is going to be in the top three or four for me, by the way.
Fair enough.
And again, those things, one benefits the other, obviously. Michael Irvin's an interesting one. Never drop passes, that's for
never.
Sure. Yep, big time play, like, physical.
If you were putting together a team, wouldn't you want...
Went up against prime time in prime time's prime. Yeah, now listen...
Played, I want to ask you.
Went up. Rod Woodson obviously limited in that Super Bowl, but went up against the best corner at the time. Yeah, listen, won that Super Bowl 30.
Well, I want to ask you why you think Randy Moss is better than Marvin Harrison when you said Marvin Harrison is kind of a one-trick pony. That's kind of what Randy Moss does. Just go deep. Why is Randy Moss that much better than Marvin Harrison?
I think Marvin Harrison, I don't want to have it both ways. Peyton Manning is, I'm not saying Peyton Manning isn't great. He's just not as great as he's held up to be.
Okay.
Peyton Manning is obviously very effective. They throw the ball a ton. He benefited from the system that he was in. For the vast majority of his career, there have been other options for the quarterback to throw the ball to, which frees up Marvin Harrison a little bit. Randy Moss also benefited, obviously, from playing with Chris Carter for a big chunk of his career. But Marvin Harrison, I think, is great and would be a Hall of Famer, even if he... But there are certain guys that if they'd gotten drafted by the wrong team and they've gotten into the... If Marvin Harrison, let's say, had been drafted by the Bears...
Is this an NFL?
What?
Is this an NFL?
Ooh, NFL. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a segment I debuted just last week. Dig it up. If you missed episode one, dig it up. It was dandy. I got to get to another one of those. But yes, Marvin Harrison... might not even be a Hall of Famer if he'd gone to the wrong team. He is. I feel like he's a product of the system a little bit. He, you know, getting to play in the dome, nice and safe. He's a little bit of a slight guy.
Randy Moss in a dome.
But Randy Moss. Oh, but I think there was also a time he played for a team called the New England Patriots
with Tom Brady in a good system.
All right.
Yeah, if you put Randy
Touché,
Moss,
I mean,
I'm
he,
just saying.
He did not. Yeah, he did vanish for 2 years in Oakland. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but listen, I still haven't heard any. Rank came up with a legitimate counter to that. What's your answer to that? If it's not Moss or T.O., who would be the second best receiver?
John Taylor.
I knew you were going to say that.
I knew.
Cut his mic off.
I knew you were going to actually say.
I like Chris Carter.
49er.
Why would you even go at least Dwight Clark?
Well, Art Monk.
Jay McMaster one drops me a line. Jay McMaster one says Vince Young is massively overrated. I actually say it's interesting. Let's wait and see. I say TBD on Vince Young.
What?
He had moments of success. He was great 2 years ago in the second half of the year. He was dynamite when the Titans started out. What were they? 0-6, 0-7,
yes.
And all of a sudden they reeled off all those wins in a row. Listen, I'm not ready to close the book on Vince Young
me
yet.
Either.
He's a guy that he's an interesting guy that if he winds up in the right place, may still thrive. I'm not ready to close the book on him. Dusty McGowan says Ocho Cinco, who we talked about. Tebow. I guess TBD, but a little bit of too much hype about a guy, and I definitely don't think was worthy of a first-round draft pick. How about Antonio Cromartie? How do we feel about him? I kind of agree with that one.
I don't know who's overrating him. Who's overrating him?
Who rates him as good?
Yeah, that's
people, the problem.
People hailed him as what a difference maker he was on that Jets defense last year.
Well, he was a difference maker for the Jets 2 years ago when he was playing for the Chargers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's true. Right. First of all, he made the decisive or didn't make the decisive
the
play of that game.
Play, yeah, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah. That turned
Sean
that
Green.
Game. Right.
He was already wearing Jets green at that point.
And But listen, a lot of people held him up as a guy who, especially when Darrelle Revis was out, and even when Revis was on the field, was taking the bigger receiver a lot of the time, physically larger receiver, and generally shutting him down. But for some reason, yes, he is one of those guys who's a big gamble guy and gets smoked quite a bit. So it's hard to hold him. If I'm not mistaken, was he not a Pro Bowler this past year?
Probably.
I think he was.
You know, you play for New York, you're playing opposite of Revis. Of course you're going to get a little bit of juice there.
Greg 774 says Matty Ice. That's a good point, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, people talk about that quite a bit. Matty Ice, his nickname is coming through. You know, his nickname indicates he comes through in the clutch, but the only time I can ever remember him really doing that was against Baltimore on that Thursday night game last year, and had the best team arguably in the NFC last year and got crushed by Aaron Rodgers and company. And Sanchez, who I've berated, has obviously won some playoff games, has won more playoff games than Matty Ice has.
But do you not think that Matt Ryan would do that if he was with the Jets? Would the Jets be better off with Matt Ryan or Mark Sanchez?
Interesting point. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, put him into that system, and yeah, he probably thrives. Yeah. So, all right. Ray, here's another one. Ray Lewis. And by the way, let me just say this. Let me look into my crystal ball and predict that this top 100 list, this current player list, I predict that Ray Lewis is going to wind up in the top dozen or 15 players in all the NFL, which is ludicrous. Again, assuming that it's based on just the players' 2010 deeds.
That can't be.
Well, it would be laughable. But again, is there anybody in the NFL among his peers who seems to have more respect than Ray Lewis? And if this turns into a popularity contest, which apparently it is, considering Donovan McNabb, who is the 27th best quarterback in the NFL, somehow got onto this list. It's ridiculous. So I think we can assume that Ray Lewis is going to be high up there too. And I'm going to be outraged. Listen, I've made my points. Aaron Rodgers better be number one, right, or the whole thing goes out the window. Ray Lewis, I predict, is going to be high up there. He's overrated at this point. I'm not saying that Ray Lewis in his prime,
his career,
was not great. Obviously, I think sideline to sideline was the speed, and a guy that size, the speed that he exhibited from sideline to sideline was unbelievable. But at this point, he's an old man. And to continue to talk about him as the best player on that defense is laughable. He's at least no better than the fourth best defensive player, just off the top of my head, on that defense. True?
Fourth best?
At best, yes.
What's going to happen with
Helody? Helody goes ahead of him. Yeah. Ed Reed goes ahead of him. Terrell Suggs goes ahead of him. That's just off the top of my head. Am I forgetting anybody? Nobody else in the secondary back there. Who am I forgetting? But yes, he's far from the best. So if he winds up ahead of any of those guys that I just named, then it would be wrong. Another guy who, and the other thing with Ray Lewis is, I've said this many times before, and to a lesser degree, Keith Brooking is a very limited player. But what they have in common are their silly, pubescent pregame huddles, like getting everybody psyched up. And I happen to love it as somebody.
Oh.
What?
Really?
What?
Those are tired.
I'm saying I love it, and here's why. I love watching Ray Lewis do his histrionics, dancing to and fro, sliding, everything else. We're the villains today. We're coming in here. We're going to send everybody home sad. And he does all that kind of
like
stuff.
Like Ronald Miller from Can't Buy Me Love.
Exactly like that. Exactly like that. Malachi from Children of the Corn. Yes. Yes, he does it. He does all that, all the histrionics and everything. And I've said it many times before, and I'm going to say it again now. Keep on dancing, Ray Lewis, because you know what? You've had a lot of success doing it. That Baltimore defense is unquestionably great, and you've been probably the biggest part of it over your career. Keep on dancing. Hey, listen, it's worked against 30 NFL teams. No reason. You're going to dance your way right into the Hall of Fame. But just remember this, Ray. There's one team that is impervious to your dancing. One team that it has no effect on. The team that is the kryptonite to your dancing around. That team is named the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, that's right. I'm not going to apologize for being a Steeler fan.
Sure not. Yeah. Sure not.
And by the way, go ahead and look it up. Ray Lewis and his mighty Baltimore defense, when they play another rugged defense named the Steel Curtain, always comes up snake eyes when it really counts for both teams.
And at least Ray Lewis has a ring, and you're talking about Keith. What has Keith Brooking done?
He does those dances. He does the cheerleading.
I would have never have known he was still in the league.
He's a cheerleader. Like, what? That's what he does. He does those, and then we see him on camera, and then somehow this equals him being, in the minds of many casual football fans, an actually good football player, which, of course, he is not.
Yes.
Mentioned Matty Ice. Rashard Mendenhall. Just to, so I don't seem like too much of a homer.
Wait. Oh, lucky. You got neckties.
Well, I mentioned LT. Too tentative. He doesn't hit the hole. He tries to he picks and chooses too much and then just falls into the line. He has no actual instinct, it seems, for the position. He doesn't, when the play calls for, when the situation calls for him putting his head down and making half a yard to get the first down, he's still busy dancing around back there to try and break one. Yes, he's dynamite and does snap off with that speed and again the size and everything, but he loves the being a whirling dervish out there quite a bit. Loves that spin move when there's not someone within 5 yards of him sometimes, but all of that covers up for the fact that he just, in spite of his size, isn't always as tough as he could possibly be. Now, speaking of Ray Lewis and Rashard Mendenhall, it reminds me, one of the great injuries I've ever heard in NFL history was that Ray Lewis broke Rashard Mendenhall's shoulder. Not his shoulder, not his collarbone, broke his shoulder. The best injury I can remember is when the Raiders and the Bears played and on the AstroTurf, the cold AstroTurf of Soldier Field. Jim McMahon suffered a lacerated spleen, I think. Or maybe it was a lacerated liver, one or the other. But it was it was a big organ.
No, it was a kidney.
Or a kidney. I like the idea that things are getting so rough out there that you're lacerating your organs.
Yes.
That happened to Ahmad Brooks on the Niners this year. He had a lacerated kidney, liver. Explain something.
Another guy. How about this one? Phil Rivers.
What?
Rivers.
Are you serious?
I'm not saying Phil Rivers isn't great. I'm just saying he's not as great as people hold him up to be. It's amazing to me and ironic even, and talk about this top 100 list. Here's another bet I'm willing to make you right now. Phil Rivers will be ahead of Eli Manning, which I wouldn't really argue with.
No, Eli Manning should be on your list and not Rivers.
Well, I think he's also going to be ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, which is, you know, complete hooey and applesauce.
Phil, Rivers or Eli?
What did I just say? I said that Phil being ahead of Eli is acceptable.
Okay.
But Phil, with his zero rings, being ahead of Ben Roethlisberger and his two rings is cockamamie, hooey, and applesauce. And more, because it's Roethlisberger's been on that with that defense. Yeah, how about Phil Rivers has played behind a good offensive line his entire career? He's had a running game.
His O-line the last 2 years has not been good.
All right. Very good running game.
Not last year.
What are you talking about?
No.
What do you mean, what am I talking about? Mike Tolbert had a very nice year. Ryan Matthews is another guy who's overrated. And so
he got hurt.
Who, Ryan Matthews?
Yes.
Oh, come on. He was over. Talk about a guy who was built up before he ever touched a football.
Got hurt.
Ryan Matthews was throwing the guy's name Sihei Ajiri-Tutu last year.
Not
some of the guys you've never heard of before last year.
No, Legadu Nane, by the way, the best name in the NFL. Legadu Nane.
You know, A.J. Smith likes to take away all the best players.
And the number one defense. And yet, and year after year.
Who's his coach, by the way?
All right, fine. Listen,
he said,
Norvell is a terrible coach. I'm just saying it's a hard case to make that Phil Rivers is the best quarterback out of the 2004 class when he's the only one of the three who doesn't have a ring.
I would put him over Eli for sure. So Eli's not on your list because I think we all agree that nobody thinks he's good. Right?
I disagree with that. They won the Super Bowl with him. How about bad is he? He had a good year last year.
Congratulations. Oh, no, congratulations.
If Eli hadn't have fumbled that ball, that was a terrible, goofy play.
He fumbled it. It's not like it was somebody else's play.
I understand.
I disagree.
If you take that play away, he did have a really good year.
Well, him and Trent Dilfer can sit around and talk about how they have more rings than Dan Marino.
He doesn't compare with left. He is definitely better than Trent Dilfer.
Brad Johnson.
All right.
Him and Brad Johnson. They can hang out. But you can't tell me the Giants and you.
I didn't.
Any Giants fan would be happy to tell you they'd rather have Phillip Rivers. And if they don't, they're lying.
Well, I'm telling you, ahead of both of those guys is Roethlisberger.
That's fine.
And I don't approve of him as a human being. But for the record, I'm not making a case for him as the NFL's man of the year or anything. I'm only holding him up as the most successful quarterback in many ways. than over the other two guys. And so Phil Rivers, when you hold him up as best quarterback from 2004, that by definition makes him an overrated guy because
who's
he does
doing
not.
This?
A lot of people do that. I'll tell you who's going to do it are these players. The players who voted
no
on the
chance.
Top 100 list
no.
are going to put Phil Rivers ahead of Ben Roethlisberger.
Not a
and
chance.
Then you will really hear me become no. angry. All right, let's move on from this. And Ocho Cinco, I mentioned, and I did. Should we talk about him? Here's him riding the bull. So annoying. He doesn't play football, but he rides bulls. Let's address this subject by talking about it for as long as he was actually riding that bull. Ready?
Hold on. Let me get my watch. Ready, Dave?
Yes.
And go.
Dummy.
Done.
All right.
We're out.
All right. Let's move on to something else.
That was longer.
Dave was holding on with a pinky, so kept the clock going.
You know, last week people liked hearing us flap our gums a little bit about Ashton Kutcher's move there. To me, this guy is one of the most overrated celebrities that there is. Because what has he done? I mean, legitimately, that 70s show was successful. But in terms of movies, his most successful, I don't know, at the box office, but I mean, his best one is actually Dude, Where's My Car?
Of course. Well, that's a good movie.
It's not too bad. It actually gets a couple laughs. There's some laughs.
Laughs.
But he's never done anything. He continues to have this career.
What about that Coast Guard movie he was in?
All right. But it got me to thinking, with Schwarzenegger, too, in the news, I was thinking, he's been in a lot of good pictures, you know, ones that are fun to watch.
What?
You know,
what do you mean, what?
What are his movies?
Predator is not awesome. Are you kidding me? Total Recall?
Jingle All the Way?
No. There are so, listen.
End of Days.
Running Man?
Okay, Running Man, I yield the floor. My mistake.
You know what's great? We have Necktie Milner, whose name is Milner, so I can do this one with him. Here, give me your hand here. The best line that Schwarzenegger ever had in a movie is, Dylan, I see the CIA has you pushing too many pencils. That's his best line ever. But if you start stacking up his movies, they don't rank. But then I was thinking, you know, who has been in the most great pictures? It's sort of like Chaz Sheen. You know, he talks about winning. And that's
right.
We talk about football, and that's what it comes down to. I am a guy who I'm able to differentiate between a guy, you know, that Dan Marino is a great quarterback, even though he never got a ring, and he is better than Brad Johnson. But that being said, it is about the rings. And in fact, Rank, you're working on that for a piece for NFL.com on
Absolutely.
Who has the most hardware
Absolutely.
In NFL history. Like Joe Montana has the four rings, has the MVP trophies. Tony Dorsett has a Heisman trophy, has a Super Bowl trophy, and so on and so forth. In movie terms, which actor has the most, you know, has been in the most good pictures? I'm not talking Academy Awards. I don't really care so much about that.
No.
But who's been in the most good pictures? And to me, my head first goes to Paul Newman on this one. Paul Newman has been in, start out with The Sting and Butch mm-hmm. Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So right out of the gate, that's championship level performance. Cool Hand Luke,
absolutely.
Slapshot, you might make a case, is the best sports movie of all time.
Yeah, that's in our... Well, Caddyshack.
Yeah, that's close.
It's close.
Well, I mean, it's top three.
Hoosiers. But yeah, I think Slapshot is up there. The Hustler, that's also, I guess, technically you could call a sports movie.
Absolutely.
The Verdict, Nobody's Fool. Then you start getting into, like, you know, Hudsucker Proxy is a little bit underrated. Ford Apache the Bronx was good. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, if you want to throw Cars in there. Road to Perdition, because he did the voice on the one car. I don't know if that counts. But Road to Perdition, another underrated picture with Tom Hanks and Jude Law. Pretty good picture.
Good movie.
But I'll tell you who the winner is with this thing, I think. And, I was surprised by this, but if you look it up, it's hard to debate. De Niro. I know maybe that scene. For the kids out there.
Think of them from the Fox movies.
If you're 21, or younger, I think he's probably suffers the same affliction that the Rolling Stones do, which is, in my lifetime, they've done nothing but dreck. It's all garbage mm-hmm. out of the Rolling Stones and Robert De Niro. Yeah, it's about analyze this and analyze that and all the other, you know, the Fockers foolishness, all that. But look up his pictures, and it's really hard to argue with. Goodfellas, awesome, maybe the best movie of all time. Midnight Run is great. Untouchables is great. Raging Bull is great.
Casino.
Yes, I was getting to that. King of Comedy. Are we familiar with
King
of...
Rupert Pupkin.
Rupert Pupkin is a great picture. I bet you that's one of those movies that Milner's never seen, right? Is that true? Godfather 2, Bronx Tale, Cape Fear, Taxi Driver.
Heat.
Heat. Love Heat. Heat's a wonderful.
Why would you scoff at Heat?
Heat's overrated.
Absolutely not.
Heat is overrated.
Heat is a wonderful picture.
Can I ask, what about where does Harrison Ford rank in all this?
Well, you know I love me some Han Solo. You know, you're not going to get any argument from me.
He was
you stole
Han
his blaster.
Solo. He's Indian. Just look at his characters. Han Solo, Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan. I mean, just those movies alone.
The Blade Runner.
Get off my plane.
Yeah, well, now you derailed us.
Why are you doing that?
That's not a good picture. I don't like that one. I don't like when people talk about Air Force One as
it's one
a of
good picture.
No, it's not. It's
the Fugitive was better.
The Fugitive is good. Fugitive.
I thought that was a good one.
That might be up there. What about Sean Connery?
Oh.
He did like a half dozen
the Bonds.
Bond pictures, obviously. He's in The Untouchables.
Awesome.
The Man Who Would Be King. Is a wonderful picture. Highlander.
The Rock?
The Rock, yeah.
Come on!
The Rock is great.
The Rock is fun.
I don't know about that. Oh,
Welcome to The Rock.
Indiana Jones. Oh, you're doing a little Connery for us? Give us a little Connery.
Your best. I can't repeat the line. I picked the bluest line of the movie.
Can you do a little Damashek for us?
Hey, listen, fella. Here's the thing. What about this Brad Pitt fella? He's been in Snatch. He was in Fight Club. And Glorious Bastards.
All right. I don't know what that is, other than a terrible impression. Man, we had so many things I wanted to talk about, but Necktie Milner's given me the wrap it up sign. We had a lot of things I wanted to talk about.
Save it for next week.
I wanted to do another NFL. I wanted to do a fan conduct policy. We got our blog coming up, the Damashek blog page, where all sorts of Hooey and Applesauce will be available for you, including be on the lookout on NFL.com for my sit-down interview, the debut of my new talk show, Talking Ball.
Talking Ball.
Talking Ball with Mercedes Lewis of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Give that one a look on NFL.com. Like we say, Rank has a good piece coming up about the top hardware
gathers. We'll let you vote on that one.
Yeah, look out for the toughest names. And with all these things, please drop me a line at Damashek. Also hit up at Adam Rank. There, you hear it there. See, everything's all right now. See, we started out with some acrimony, but you hear the Yum Yum song. Doesn't that make everything feel all right? If it were me, I would get I'd get D. Smith, Kamish Goodell, and everybody together and just play this song for him. And don't you see, just like at the end of Jedi, at the end of Return of the Jedi, everybody gets together, and whatever happened, happened. Whatever ugliness went down, it's over with. It's history. Now everything feels all right. Doesn't this just make you feel good on the inside?
No, I wish Solo would have taken out his gun and shot one of the Ewoks. Like, gotten too drunk and just started waving it around and
I think you're missing the spirit of what I'm getting at here. But all right, Rank. All right, Necktie Milner. Good times. And say we need more time. All right, be on the lookout on Sunday night. Me and Rank, our bonus podcast talking about this cockamamie top 100 list. We'll yap with you there. We'll yap with you then. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.